Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. JJ and Dan here to recap the matchup. The Bills absolutely dominated the Carolina Panthers in a rushing attack splendor down in Carolina, and now are facing the much hated on a hot streak heater Chiefs this Sunday in Buffalo, 4:25 p.m. Dan, where's the anxiety level at right now?
The anxiety level out of a 10, JJ, is probably at like a 7. Listen, this one feels weird for a couple of reasons. One, the Bills are coming off of a blowout win, which you just very eloquently stated. And yet, it still feels like there are a lot of looming questions about this defense, i.e., is this new look Bills defense that we saw finally be able to roll out after the bye week, is it going to be suitable enough to stand up against a revamped, revitalized Kansas City attack? And I think a lot of Bills Mafia, myself included, have our doubts. Two, neither of these teams are like, these teams are meeting at a time where they're both vying for divisional placement, not the high level conference placement that we're used to seeing them compete for. Right now, neither team is sitting in first in their respective divisions, and they are looking up at a couple of young upstart teams respectively. And really, this has become a must-win game for both teams if they want to stay alive divisionally, forget for conference placement and all that type of stuff. So it different stakes, feels a little bit weird as a result of that. But JJ, nonetheless, it's Bills football on a Sunday. I'm ready to talk it. I'm ready to watch it and ready to love it.
Awesome. Love that. Now let's start where we left off last time with our prediction sure to go wrong in this Carolina yes. Chiefs or the Carolina Panthers game.
We're so right on everything.
We hit a lot of things. So we were way off, way
terrible.
Off.
It was terrible.
Way off on our score predictions. We both thought that the Panthers would score 21 points and the Bills wouldn't get past 30. Of course, the final score was 40-9, which hit the over. I think we both took the under. Yeah, yeah. And we both took the over, but we took the over in a competitive game with a one score win. So,
I thought for sure I took the under. Oh, yeah. Okay.
You did. You did take the under by okay. 1 point. Yep. You had a 45 as your total. So I took the over by 2 points. But we neither of us thought it was going to be, you know, over by 3 points, 40-9. Kind of blowout with Josh Allen, James Cook, and other starters wearing baseball caps in the fourth quarter with 12 minutes to go. And then Hoyt over under half sack. I had hit the over.
How wrong was I about that one? I mean,
we can start there. Let's start with the defense, because our other prediction was Maxwell Hairston over under 25% snaps. He did 44% of the snaps. So we both took the under and we're both wrong.
We thought he would be a healthy scratch.
We did. Yeah.
Like, I was so pleasantly surprised with the Buffalo Bills decision to play him. But yeah, man, let's start with the defensive side of the ball, because that has been the long-standing issue for this Buffalo Bills team this season. Offensive play calling aside, which we have all gone over, it's been the defense that's been the big question. So JJ, let's start there. Why don't you run through some of your highlights? Tell us what you saw, tell us what you liked, and then what you think might actually be transferable to this KC game.
Well, I think that on defense, Michael Hoyt sets the defense in a completely different gear. He's like a twice as energetic version of Joey Bosa when it comes to providing juice to the defense. And he provided it to two levels. Both, I think, the linebacker play and the front line defensive line play looked better every snap he was in there. And they did move him around. He had his hand in the dirt as an edge rusher. He was inside as a defensive tackle for a number of snaps. And he just looked pretty dominant. I mean, for somebody who's 260 pounds, he was able to bull rush 300 plus pound guards. And as we talked about in the preview, the Panthers they're not a slouch of an offensive line. They're a decent offensive line. They came into that game as one of the hottest rushing offenses in the league. The Bills shut down the rushing attack in a lot of ways. And Hoyt was a big part of that, sealing the edge. He looked awesome. I mean, he had a strip sack. He was causing problems all day long, almost no matter where they lined him up. And I think that his play amplified and energized a lot of the other frontline defenders' play in a way that it helped keep the linebackers clean. And the linebackers in this one, Dan, were Shaq Thompson and Dorian Williams. So neither of the two starting, you know, preseason, if we would have said, hey, LB's 3 and 4 are going to play most of the snaps for the Bills in a game, we would have been a little bit worried. I would have been worried, right? because we saw that last year in the Bills' two-game losing streak when we saw a lot of absence in the linebacking crew. And Dorian Williams and, at that time, Baylen Specter were getting starts. Shaq Thompson is a revelation. We've already talked about him. He is the best linebacker on this team. He deserves to continue to start over anybody in that middle.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, this is now an open question, too, as we get into the Chiefs chat and the Chiefs talk. Terrell Bernard, Matt Milano have both been full participants. But based on what we saw in that Carolina game and what we saw at the tail end of that Atlanta game, too, there is a case for mixing and matching your personnel at linebacker situationally. Shaq Thompson brings that veteran savvy that we talked about. But Dorian Williams, man, just looks so much more comfortable playing next to him. And now also with the understanding that McDermott is doing a lot of the play calling now, too, which we can get into as we get into the Chiefs preview more formally. It just felt like Williams was always in a better position. He was always in the right position. Same thing with these safeties, too. And the safety rotation with Poyer coming in on more obvious running downs, the athleticism of Hancock coming in on more more passing-friendly downs. I mean, dude, just when you talk about Hoyt being out there, Maxwell Harrison, Jordan Hancock, then Dorian Williams being in the right position, Cole Bishop finding his run fits in the box as well. Just to see those five guys out there at the same time in unison on a lot of these run plays and a lot of these run fits, just to see that level of athleticism on the field and level of speed is something we've been sorely missing from this Bills defense all year. But to your point, it started with the two guys right in the middle of the spine, Williams finding his fits and his comfort zone, Shaq Thompson doing what he needed to do as the veteran leader there. It really started with those two guys, as it typically emanates out of in a McDermott defense. To me, JJ, I do think there's got to be some question as to whether or not Bernard or Milano should be the starters moving forward.
Well, and I think in a three linebacker set, I think Shaq Thompson, Dorian Williams, and Bernard should be on the field. And I think that in certain situations, if it's long and late, you may take Shaq Thompson, or you may take Dorian Williams off the field and put Shaq Thompson, Terrell Bernard, and Matt Milano in for the best three coverage players that you have at linebacker. If for some reason you don't trust Taron Johnson in the slot, right? Like, if you're going to be in base personnel in a long and late down, which they haven't been, they've been leaning more towards dime looks and bringing in extra DBs. But really, that's the only time I could see Dorian Williams sitting down. Like any other time, he should be on the field, I think. And especially because of, as you mentioned, the change in play calling. And then the big problem with the Buffalo Bills defensive line, especially with these injuries, is they have less and less big body stuffer types and more penetration style defensive tackles, which is the absolute kryptonite to Terrell Bernard's style of play. He is small, undersized, fast and athletic, but he cannot be touched. You know, if a guard gets on him, he's toast. There's nothing happening in that play.
Right. If a guard or a center, any type of interior offensive lineman, climbs to the second level and meets Bernard, he cannot find his fit. He cannot get off of a block against a 320-pound offensive lineman. He just can't. It's not what his game is suited for. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, you made some observations via text during the game that Hairston had recovery speed. He was fearless.
Yeah.
He was fearless of playing the jam because he knew that if somebody ended up breaking out against him, he could catch up. He got he was caught up in a scrape pick play and closed the distance. And it was a errant throw. But I think even if the ball would have made it there, he would have had a chance to break up the pass, even though he was 2 or 3 yards behind at one point in the play. His catch-up speed is amazing. He's sticky in coverage. I'm so excited to see him. I mean, 44% of the snaps in the first week. He's not even on the injury report, is limited in any way this week. So hopefully the Rook has a nice healthy season from here on out. And just every week we get to see more and more of him.
And let's give our flowers to this Bills coaching staff, because I think you and I were both of the mindset that absolutely not. They're going to Cole Bishop this kid.
Yep.
They're going to bring him back so slow to the point it might be detrimental to his development. No, they rolled him right back out there. They wanted him to get some real life game reps in. And most importantly to me, JJ, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, how these coaches tend to feel like they are scheme over skill a lot of times. They put Maxwell Harrison in a position where his skill set would immediately find him some early confidence and early success. They didn't ask him to play a lot of this match zone nonsense that they've been rolling out there. He was out there almost exclusively for man reps, and he was given an assignment to stick to, and he was able to do it successfully on almost every turn. He wasn't targeted once officially in the box score.
He would, yeah. And his other piece that he came up and contributed quite a lot in run fits, even if it wasn't making the tackle. He made that one solo incredible solo tackle on the edge
on Jimmy Horn Jr. Yeah.
But then he also was able to affect the run game in the way that you want a cornerback to affect it. String it out, make the runner stop his feet, slow his feet, help, you know, get your help there to help you take him down and not have a cutback lane. He did everything we wanted him to do. And what's surprising is you mentioned his man reps being his most successful. The thing that's most exciting about that to me is his college tape was largely him in zone.
Yep.
And they essentially looked at that tape, saw the skill set, and said, we can put him man up on an NFL caliber receiver, and we think he'll be able to hang. And with just a one game, half the game reps sample size against some pretty solid, you know, receivers, he did a nice job.
100%. Definitely a bright spot.
First NFL, you know, start to have that level of success. Also tells me a little bit about, we always dog on this coaching staff for like slow playing it with rookies. I think they play the rookie as fast as their skills let them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like Terrell Bernard, slow play. Cole Bishop, slow play. Josh Allen, they slow played it. Players that we've seen develop over time, they've tried to keep out of the lineup as fast as long as they could, but you know, Tre'Davious was in right away, day one starter.
Tremaine Edmonds,
Christian Benford, right? Like these players, if the player brings it, I think the coaching staff is willing to put them in. So they may be cautious with how much they're going to put on somebody's plate if they don't believe they're ready, but when they're ready, that they send them.
Yeah, without a doubt. And it was great to see them do with Hairston, because you, me, all of Bills Mafia, all of Buffalo Bills media, no one thought Hairston was going to play in this game.
And it also says something to all those people who are like, oh, no, here's Maxwell Hairston, another speedy cornerback for the Bills to ruin, right? Because Kyrie Elam was the problem, everybody. He couldn't get on the field because he wasn't good.
Yep. And it is time for us to own that, right? Yeah. So, yeah, because we're those guys that you're talking about.
Yes.
So, yeah, man, defensive side of the ball, very impressive. We would be remiss, though, if we didn't talk about one of the big negative of the day, which is the loss of Ed Oliver, right? JJ, it is hard to quantify because Oliver, it seems, since signing that extension, has gotten progressively better year after year after year into this contract. He was on pace this season, and granted a small sample, to have his best, most disruptive year as a Buffalo Bill, and it is tragically cut short due to a torn bicep. Oliver is out on Instagram. He is posting that he's going to be back. He's going to be back in time for the playoffs, in time to play for it all, as he says, with a little emoji of a ring. Love that. Love that for us. But
hope.
we love the hopium hit on that one. But the reality is the Buffalo Bills, also with TJ Sanders currently out too, despite the reinforcement of Larry Ogunjobi coming back, they find themselves short in the defensive tackle rotation. Jordan Phillips elevated from the practice squad, signed to the 53-man roster. But it begs the question, JJ, are the Bills going to go turn their focus at the trade deadline to a free agent acquisition or a trade target like a Calais Campbell?
We always have these conversations, and my answer is always super lame because I'm like, if the price is right, you know, like, then that's the reality. Like that's just it, is they're going to, you know, I trust Brandon Bean to look at the market, see what's available. And if there's something that he thinks he can upgrade for a player on a rental contract, who's going to be better than the draft position of that pick that they're going to sacrifice, I think they make a move. I'm worried that they might focus on getting a wide receiver like the Amari Cooper deal. More, because I don't think that Amari ever was worth a third rounder, and they might get taken. Steve Smith Sr., formerly of the Carolina Panthers, said on his podcast or YouTube channel, in which he was, it was his YouTube special, 20 minutes on why Keon Coleman is a bust in the NFL, with all of his stat breakdowns and film watching, that he very lazily does. And he said, but I love this. I'm sharing the Steve Smith Sr. thing because it's worthwhile. He said that the Buffalo Bills pick up wide receivers like somebody going to the grocery store hungry. They make poor choices because they want it so bad. They're not thinking of the bigger plan, the better picture, what's worth it, what's, you know, what their budget is. They're going to the store hungry. And that, I think, is a great way to summarize the Amari Cooper trade. It's a great way to summarize almost anything that they end up doing if they do anything before Tuesday at the trade deadline for a wide receiver this year.
I agree. And I think, you know, going back to the Ed Oliver piece, we want them to avoid that in the defensive tackle area as well, because this is, like, the wide receiver room, another area where they've already sunk a ton of draft capital, a lot of resources into it. I think ultimately the question of, do you change your sights to a defensive tackle target? As much as I would love to, and I'm going to say his name again, go pick up Calais Campbell, because I think the contract is manageable at this point in the season. It's a 1 year rental, and it's not going to cost you a lot from Arizona. And despite the age, he is endlessly, almost scientifically impossibly productive at that position still. Yep. But same thing. I think for me, a lot of this depends on what is the TJ Sanders prognosis. Because if you're going to get him back at some point, then I think you roll with who got you here. Yeah. And you give Sanders a chance to really step up and show out in the absence of Ed Oliver.
Well, and I think, too, the fact that Ed Oliver was injured and one day later was having surgery tells me that having, you know, sort of a sports injury repair surgery myself, it was kind of amazing just a couple of 2-3 days after my surgery, what my surgeon was able to tell me about my recovery window and timeline, right? Like, because they see it all, right? They're in there literally on the ligaments, on the joints, on the muscle, the tendons, everything. They see everything inside. So as they close you up, they're like, okay, I've seen this one before, and I'm sure that Ed Oliver's going to, like, the best bicep repair person in the universe that money can buy. And then that doctor is going to be able to come out and say, all right, this is what when I was in there literally looking at how you're put together, this is what I saw and this is what I anticipate it looks like. So that was a good sign that they went so fast for the surgical option, because it does indicate to me that maybe the window is open for him to return during playoffs.
That would be great. I mean, that would be great for us, for sure. All right, JJ, let's switch quickly to the offensive side of the ball, where the domination continued for the Buffalo Bills against Carolina in the form of the run game. I mean, a lot of the discourse after the game was about how the passing offense still looks off. And so a lot of the bye week discourse about training for a wide receiver continued. But man, I mean, Joe Brady can scheme a run game, dude. Reggie Gilliam experience, right?
Yeah.
The way he was used to seal edges, Jackson Hawes in motion. Yeah. That man is terrifying when he gets ahead of steam. Right. And then Connor McGovern, to me, played his best individual game of the season. His ability, again, against a really good defensive interior and a really well-coached defense, his ability to find holes and climb to the second level to keep James Cook clean from that linebacker unit, absolutely great stuff. Obviously well-practiced, obviously well-coached, but man, the movement of that run scheme, it was almost like poetry in motion.
Yeah, I mean, A'shaun Robinson, you know, DJ Wanham, there's some guys on that defensive line. Derek Brown was
basically stud.
Ineffective. He was like the best player on that defensive line. And he had one assisted tackle. They completely erased him because they basically, I mean, yes, Connor McGovern was climbing to the second level, but he was climbing to the second level because he didn't have a duo blocking assignment in the center of the line. Everything was sweeping out to the edges. And so that's easy to seal when you're not trying to clear that the clutter of the middle of the field. And they just hit that sweep over and over. And then just when the Carolina Panthers started overloading to the sweep, they came back and hit the inside zone that blew wide open for 46 or whatever, 64 yards, something like
64.
That. 64. Yeah. This is what, I mean, anybody who watches football casually, that all that tape, the entire Carolina Panthers game, is like a clinic on how you want to design a run scheme against an opponent's weaknesses and then build off of it so that they never get comfortable. They never are able to anticipate your next move. The problem is, this is the problem, is that the Bills can do this as long as they don't have the procedural errors, pre-snap penalties, holding, the stuff that puts them in a position where it's not the smartest choice to run, second and 20, third and 17, right? Like when they can stay in phase and ahead of the sticks by getting at least 4 yards per play, they could do this. They can do this all day. That line, whew, That line is so built for this. They're great pass protectors too, as we know from, you know, Josh's historically low sacks last year, but they are exceptional run blockers, especially when you add in, as you mentioned, Reggie Gilliam, Jackson Hawes, even Keon Coleman had some good blocking steps, but he was a terrible receiver in this game. It just sucks.
I'm not ready to be out on Keon yet, and I don't want to skew too negative because this was overall a really good 40 offensive to 9. Performance. Right?
I don't want to be somebody who complains, you know, it's like, don't look a gift horse in the mouth, right? Like, this is a good win. They needed it.
And this is how they have been telegraphing to Bills Mafia how they are going to beat a team like Kansas City, who they've been aiming to beat for forever. They are going to have the opportunity on Sunday, like they have in their previous 7 matchups with Kansas City, to dominate the ball at the line of scrimmage. Kansas City just cannot stop the run and has not been effective against the run for quite a few years. And what we saw on display here, it wasn't just the big, heavy personnel that we're so used to seeing Brady roll out there. This is their most effective game running the ball out of 11 as well. And just a couple of wrinkles here and there. With regard to the James Cook runs out of the 11 personnel shotgun looks, I mean, it looked seamless and it looked fluid no matter what personnel package they are running out. And that's eventually the point that you want to get to with the scheme, is when you do need to pass the ball, you don't want it to be as predictable percentage wise as it had been. And as we recapped in the pregame leading up to this game, where whenever they're in 11 and they're in shotgun, 80% of the time they're passing the ball. Whenever they're under center and they're in 12, 13, or 22, they're 76% of the time they're running the ball. They changed up and they messed around with a lot of it. Now, the passing reps were not effective really until the second half. I think you can debate about whether some of that was on personnel, some of that was more on Josh, right? And we can get into that if you want to. I think Josh is just not seeing things really clearly at this particular point, because there were guys open. But at the end of the day, when you run the ball that effectively, even just the threat of being able to be multi-layered out of all of your personnel sets is going to be enough to keep even the best coach defense on their heels, which is where the Bills had the Panthers all day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's the kind of thing that the Chiefs and Spagnuolo will have an answer for this rushing attack. They'll have a way to personnel-wise.
I don't know about that.
Continue. Let me finish the thought. they'll have an answer for that. I don't think that the Bills can brute force their way through this game. I don't believe that, because I believe that here's what I believe. I believe the Chiefs will stuff the box with 9 players and cover 3 receivers with 2 safeties only. Like, that is the level of commitment they will put because of how poorly Josh has looked. We might find Bills Mafia, we might finally see a deep touchdown in this game because of how much attention the Chiefs will pay to James Cook and shutting it down. They want to get the Bills off their script as fast and as hard as possible. So I see safety and cornerbacks run specific blitzes coming at such a high level that it's going to change the math in the box, because that's what Spagnuolo does. He basically says, okay, what's the best thing you can do? I'm going to erase it and make you play left-handed. I see that as the focus. And that means it's going to be ripe. Play action, hits over the top, the deep ball should be there if that's how they choose to play the Bills. And I am not confident that the Bills will be able to hit it.
I agree with you that play action is going to be an opportunity there, right? Like, but I mean, let's be real, with this linebacking core with Kansas City and the issues they're having along the defensive line, Karloftis is having an okay year, right? But he's never been a great run stopper. Chris Jones is at the point in his career where he's flipping a switch and deciding when he wants to own a rep and then putting himself in reserve for when he doesn't want to. So he hasn't been as consistently dominant. I mean, there is an argument to be made that their two best tacklers in the run game are their DBs and McDuffie and Watson, which to me leaves a lot of inside zone stuff available to run against that interior defensive line, which has had a ton of issues this season. Like, this is a team, JJ, that when you look at their splits, when teams run outside the tackles versus inside the tackles, running inside the tackles, success rate and EPA per play for teams attacking Kansas City in that way, it almost doubles. What you need to do in order to affect some of those personnel box heavy decisions is add in the play action, because the Kansas City Chiefs, small sample size, not a lot of teams run play action against them, have not been good at defending play action this season, though. And if you can get Tranquil and you can get Chenault to do what you are not willing to do with guys like Spillane, guys like Caden Ellis on Atlanta, if you can force them to freeze a little bit and have to play backwards as opposed to always running downhill in the run game, I think there's a lot of opportunity to be had for the Buffalo Bills against this Kansas City Chiefs defense. I really, really do. I think this is going to be, if the Bills play it right, the most boring, suffocating, ball control, take the air out of it offensive game plan we have seen from this unit. But I agree with you. I think play action has to factor in to take the linebackers out of some of those easy run downhill situations where Spags is loading up the box.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's the point I was trying to make, is that whatever the Bills think that they can do, the Chiefs will absolutely focus their entire effort on erasing that opportunity. So, and if they don't have a counterpunch, so this is a big Joe Brady and Josh Allen question. If they don't have a counterpunch, if they don't have a quick answer to the exotic CB blitzes or the crazy edge stunts that Spagnuolo is going to send, they're going to get cooked. And it's a type of game, as we know with every Kansas City matchup, where if the Bills get field goals instead of touchdowns, pretty quickly it starts to get out of hand, and their playbook is reduced down to trying to hit bigger things that Kansas City then just is going to eat them up. So yeah. I'm the thing I'm most intimidated by with this game is that we have not seen the Bills, except for one quarter against the Ravens, be able to play in any kind of game and win, right? Like, we haven't seen the Bills do the precision game. They lost a precision game because the Patriots were more precise with their game. They lost a sloppy game because the Falcons were taking advantage of mistakes more often, right? Like, that's the problem I have, is that the Chiefs have lost more games. They've also had some errors. Mahomes was throwing a lot of interceptions early in the season, but the Chiefs look like they've pulled it all together a little bit more than the Bills have. It looks for the Bills that their defense has shown great improvements in 1 week. Their offense run game looks fantastic, but it's looked pretty good all year if they stick to it. It's just the big question mark for me is what happens if the Bills have to counterpunch, because I know the Chiefs can.
Yeah, no, and I think, and listen, I don't want to rush to prediction, sure to go wrong. I think the Bills offense has a better than puncher's chance against this Chiefs defense. I just think this Chiefs defense is not at all what it used to be, right? I mean, even if you want to talk about the pure pass rush game, their four-man pass rush success rate is bottom third in the league at this point. They are a team that is failing to get pressure on the opposing QB unless they commit to the blitz. Mm-hmm. And again, I think there's a lot of opportunities. If Brady and Allen play it smart, there's a lot of opportunities to take advantage of that aggressiveness. But again, use some of this. I feel like Brady has just been setting us up all season for this moment, using some of these personnel packages where you've been so statistically predictable to finally roll out those wrinkles that we've been expecting.
Yeah.
If play action does not factor into this game, though, I will really begin to question how good Brady is at his job.
Yes.
Because there is no reason why you should not be running the ball with James Cook mercilessly up the gut and then sucking in Chenault and sucking in Tranquil on play action. There's absolutely no reason why the middle of the field should not be wide open for Shakir and Kincaid for large stretches of this game.
There's also no reason, like, if I don't see a play where Josh Allen quickly takes the snap, turns to his right or left for the tunnel screen, but it's just a fake, and then launches something, a seam shot over the middle, I don't know what to tell you. I think Joe Brady sucks, right? Like, because the Bills have, with those stupid, you know, I think they're stupid unless Shakir breaks one for 80 yards and gets a touchdown, right? Like, because so many times I think it's really, it's a frustrating play for me because I get it. I understand the purpose. The wide receiver needs to make one person miss. The tight end needs to make one person miss, and it's an 8 to 10 yard gain. And so it seems it's easy profits, right? I understand the play design, but if a team plans for it, and the Kansas City Chiefs are that kind of team, when they do a lot of film study, they're very well coached. If they see that thing developing, they put overload to that side, if they blow it up for a 2 or 3 yard loss, fumble, something. That is a perfect opportunity, though, to play on their aggressiveness, have somebody vacate space and just go right over the top, right? Like, and that's what I'm going to be looking for, is those tendency breakers. Because if we continue to see the same play script and play design over and over, if we have another end around that somebody fumbles, right? Like, on a fourth and one.
I think they've launched that into the sun.
Good.
No, I cannot see them running the end around to Dawson Knox again. Oh, I just can't see it happening. Yeah.
No, or Elijah Moore. Each one of them fumbled once. That's for where I'm at with this, is like, there's ripe opportunities, just as you laid out. And I'm not saying that I think that the Kansas City Chiefs are an absolutely flawless defense, because I know they're not. They have warts. But I do think that they're one of the best coached defenses. They're one of the best teams in the league working with what they have to shut down somebody's best plays and players.
They are. I think this is the only place we depart, because we both agree that it's a well-coached unit. I think I have more faith in what we have seen as the standard play script for the Buffalo Bills, particularly in the run game, than you have.
Yeah.
I don't think, regardless of coaching, that the Kansas City Chiefs have the personnel at the point of attack, in the trenches, or at the second level to dramatically affect the Buffalo Bills run game. I mean, dude, we saw it last year in the playoffs. The Bills ran at will against Kansas City. The reason why we ultimately had to go away from James Cook at certain points was because the game script, because of our defensive ineffectiveness, forced us to take an offensive posture that was not playing to our strengths in that game. Same thing in the 2024 playoff game, the divisional round in Buffalo, right? We were moving that Chiefs defensive line at will, particularly in the third quarter. I mean, Brady basically was salting that game away as early as 9 minutes to go in the third, right? But again, game script flipped because our defense could not do what it needed to do against Patrick Mahomes. And I think that's a good opportunity to flip it. And let's talk about this new look Bills defense against this new look Kansas City Chiefs offense. The Kansas City Chiefs, it always feels like we're chasing them, right? Yeah. When it comes to roster build, particularly on offense, they trade away Tyreek Hill. They win a couple of Super Bowls, and they do it with a lineup of like B-type wide receiver role players. They maximize that as much as they can until the rest of the league catches up. And then this year, they're like, you know what? We just need to have really speedy, really effective wide receivers that can attack at every level of the field. It feels like the Buffalo Bills are coming around to that realization, right? Yeah. So like the way I look at this is I'm looking at like it's the ghost of Christmas past. The Chiefs are going to be looking at an offensive mirror against what they tried to be the past couple of years when they see the Bills run out there. And the Bills and Brandon Bean are hopefully looking at the ghost of Christmas future and be like, you know what? This is ultimately what we need to get back to. Because I think this Kansas City Chiefs offensive unit, I do not think the Buffalo Bills will have a lot of answers for it. I just don't.
And to your point of the new look Buffalo Bills, you know, defense, I think that the biggest question I have is, can the Bills front four get pressure on Mahomes in a contain rush sort of way, not letting him leak out to the left or right, because he's killing teams week over week. He's looked like Patrick Mahomes from 2 or 3 years ago, in which no single player snap is over, and he will make you pay if you don't get him on the ground. And that was the biggest complaint we've had about Bills matchups with Patrick Mahomes in the past, is they don't get him on the ground. If they can affect him, hit him, and get him on the ground in this game, I think that's going to be the whole difference. That's the answer. I'm going to prognosticate that if you look at the box score after this game and the Bills have more than 3 sacks on Patrick Mahomes, they've won the game. And if they have less than 3, they've probably lost it.
You know, I want to be with you on that one. I really do. He's such a hard QB to sack. You know what I mean? And it feels like even when we do ultimately sack him, it feels like it doesn't ultimately make that much of a difference. I mean, he is the time to pressure for Mahomes this season. He is like scarily close to the top of the league. Like this offensive line, especially with their rookie, what's his name? I know they got Jalen Moore, who is the backup. The rookie Simmons. Is it Simmons that I'm thinking about? Left tackle,
Jalen Moore.
Yep.
No, that's
their backup who's starting now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I think they got the Simmons kid who's been out on some undisclosed personal issue.
Is he coming back?
Not this week.
Okay.
So as a result of that, though, Mahomes has been harassed and flushed from the pocket. Yeah. Him and Josh are battling for fourth and fifth, respectively, when it comes to scramble rates for QBs, right? I mean, his time to pressure, I think, is like seventh quickest in the league, which is uncharacteristic for a Kansas City Chiefs offense. But we have seen his willingness and his gameness to take off and run. And this is what concerns me. I actually think the Bills are going to get pressure on him in this game. Our four-man pressure rate this season, JJ, as far as success rate and EPA per play, both top quarter in the league this season. Like, the four-man pass rush for the Bills has actually been working, and we have seen it work. It just hasn't worked in a complementary or tandem way with our coverage, which brings me to, like, ultimately why I think we are going to get pressure and it's not going to matter is because we're probably going to have to find ourselves playing a lot of man in this game, which means our second level defenders and are going to have their backs turned to Mahomes. If we do not contain discipline, as you said, I think Mahomes is going to find some really easy scrambles. He's done it every team he's faced this season with a lot of success. I actually think this is a game where Mahomes could be pushing 100 yards rushing.
Okay. That's an interesting take. I think that, you know, what you say absolutely lines up. And I do know that the Buffalo Bills have employed a spy on Mahomes in the past that has not been effective. They have in the past spied him when he was healthy with Terrell Bernard or Matt Milano. Mm-hmm. And each one of them, not nearly as bad as Tremaine Edmonds, but in the neighborhood of as bad of being manipulated by Mahomes' eyes and moving off, you know, as a spy and trying to squeeze a route that he ended up just tucking the ball down and running, you know, six yards, whatever he needed to get to the sideline. I think, but I stand by the fact that I know he's being pressured. I know that it's Josh Simmons out of Ohio State, the first rounder they picked at 32nd.
That kid's good when he comes back. Yeah. That kid's good, yeah.
So if he's out for this game, Isaiah Pacheco's out for this game, you know, it's going to be interesting. But to your point, I think that the biggest disadvantage that the Bills have on defense is that they are going against Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy, and Hollywood Brown.
Too many weapons.
Absolute speedsters, and then a resurgent Travis Kelce who doesn't look, you know, he looks like he'd been working out with Taylor Swift because he is slender and he is fast again, which shouldn't be happening in his, like, what is it, 12th season?
Yep.
He's looked like he's come back around to previous versions of himself, at least in glimmers. And that means that I'm absolutely certain there's going to be at least two or three third down situations where Buffalo Bills fans are throwing their empty Labatt Blue cans at their TV screens because Travis Kelce is open with a 5-yard cushion all the way around him in some empty zone, exactly past the sticks where he needs to be.
Yeah, like he usually is. Yep. And I think what's more too, and listen, the defensive stand against Carolina was so impressive, especially with so many new parts being integrated into the scheme. But this is still a Buffalo Bills defense that when they face play action and when they face misdirection and motion, they bite so hard. They bite so hard. Carolina didn't do a lot of that. I think Kansas City will. And it's been so interesting to watch Mahomes drop back metrics. Mm-hmm. There are some games where Reed will scheme in, even if the run game isn't working. Reed will simply scheme in 14 or 15 solid opportunities for play action shots down the field. I think in that Jacksonville Jaguars game, Mahomes was like 11 for 12 on play action, right? One of his better games of the season. Then you look at a game like they just played last Monday night against Washington. Mahomes only goes three for four on play action opportunities, right? Reed just has these levers and these creative schemes that he can pull. It's where you really don't know. There is no tendency, right? There is no pattern with Reed. He is going to see what you're bad at, and he is going, and him and his Borg-like QB, they're going to assimilate to whatever they're throwing out there. Yeah. So I actually think the Bills are going to see a ton of play action thrown at them from Kansas City, even if Pacheco isn't on the field. And I think we should expect some misdirection.
Yeah. Well, and I think to your point about Andy Reid is like the difference between Andy Reid and every other offensive play caller in the league is every other offensive player play caller has a playbook. Andy Reid has like a play encyclopedia. He's got like a play ChatGPT. There is no limit to the knowledge base that he can pull from to find a play for a perfect situation to hit you exactly where it hurts. Because he's probably called that play at some point in his incredibly long career and successful career, right? Like, he has coached two impressive franchises to postseason success over the course of several decades. So there isn't something that he doesn't know how to do. And the thing that I think is so surprising about the Chiefs, and I don't want anybody to think I'm admiring them because I freaking hate them, but the thing that is impressive about them, one thing that's impressive about them, is the variability of their offense and their ability to bring between 11 and 17 guys, because they also use role players, into a scheme, into a playbook or play encyclopedia that is so vast and variable, and have them ready every week, right? Because I think that's the biggest thing that's so surprising, is every team at some time or another seems to struggle with getting new pieces to be where they're supposed to be on the field and play their supposed role in a play design. And if that role isn't kind of near leader perfect, plays fall apart. I think we've seen that in the Bills so many times, is with their kind of revolving door of wide receivers. If somebody runs the wrong route, they end up in the same space as another player. Josh is throwing a ball and neither person isn't where they need to be, and it's picked off or it's just blown up. And I think that's the problem with most offenses. That doesn't seem to always be the problem with the Chiefs ever, with Andy Reid at the helm. Is he gets his guys ready and they know what they're supposed to do, no matter how many times they change.
Juju Smith-Schuster is for sure breaking at least a 40-yard catch and run in this one, for sure.
Yikes.
All right, man.
Yep.
Prediction sure to go wrong.
Let's hit this thing.
Let's hit this. All right. So this line opened at Kansas City -1.5. It has gone up as high as -2.5 in favor of Kansas City, and has settled at -2 as we speak. Over under on this game, 52.5 points. JJ, score prediction.
Bills 32, Chiefs 28.
Ooh, that is bold. That's really bold. What gives you the confidence that this Buffalo Bills defense is going to hold this Chiefs offense to under 30?
Turnovers. Just turnovers. That's it. I think that the Bills have shown that even with really good players, and I'm not talking about Mahomes, but I'm talking about some of the skill position players, that they have an elite tier punch out capability. And so I think that there may be some fumble rooskies happening out here on Buffalo Bills turf. And then the home field advantage, I think, as well. That does affect teams, and that does affect the Chiefs.
Yeah. Man, I'm going to go, oh God. And I'm going to do this for partly karmic reasons, because every time I pick against the Bills, they seem to win.
Okay.
I am 0-3 on this podcast picking against the Bills. So I'm going to go Chiefs 34, Bills 31.
Okay.
I think what we're going to see, and this is probably going to be wrong because I'm always wrong, you're going to see opposing offensive philosophies. I actually think, because the Buffalo Bills now have so many personnel patterns on defense they can run out, you're going to see the Kansas City Chiefs play at tempo, which they do really, really well. And the Buffalo Bills really struggle with playing teams that speed up the pace on offense. It's going to limit our ability in obvious passing situations to get guys like Boyer off the field and guys like Hancock on the field. Guys like Dorian Williams off the field, guys like Terrell Bernard on the field. And I think it's going to create some advantageous matchups. On the flip side, I think, unless Joe Brady is horrible at his job, the Buffalo Bills are going to grind and suffocate this Kansas City Chiefs defense through the run game. And ultimately, what's going to come down to is, which unit defensively do you trust to get a bucket when you need it? Is it going to be Steve Spagnuolo and his endless play call sheet of plays that no one has ever seen put on film before that he can run out? Or is it going to be Babich and McDermott? And no shade of McDermott, he's a great DC, but Spags is the GOAT. So if it comes down to one of those high leverage moments, I simply trust the Kansas City Chiefs more to make that play. So I'm going to go Bills 31, Chiefs 34. I'm taking the over. I don't think either of these defenses are going to be particularly effective at stopping each other.
All right. Do you have a prop you'd like to get to?
I do. Keon Coleman. Let's talk about Mr. Coleman. All right.
Okay.
Keon Coleman. I think Vegas has his over under for yardage at this game is at like 33.5 or something like that. Keon Coleman, JJ, over under 50.5 yards receiving.
I'm going to hit the over. And I'll tell you why. It's not because I think he's good. I think
you've made that clear.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's because, sorry, I have to address it because it's blown up on socials and everybody's seen it. Just the image of him standing behind Sean McDermott looking absolutely disinterested to be there in the locker room during a victory speech from your head coach tells me everything I need to know about you. Unless you got your bell rung and you had a concussion and he literally doesn't know where he is, he should have more, even just fake energy. Even like he didn't even pretend to put his hands together while everybody's clapping. He just like stood there with a blank expression. I'm sorry. That tells I've played sports with people who have that sort of affect. That's not a guy. Like he's not going to be a guy, right? Like he might be too in his head about what's going on with his life and his role and his lack of efficacy on this team, but you can't live that way and succeed. Unless I see a change in his attitude, I don't think he's going to get any better on the field. That being said, you're over under 50 yards. I'm hitting over, and this is why. Josh Allen wants to be right on recommending Keon Coleman so bad, and we've both watched it. We've both watched the All-22. Almost every single play where Keon Coleman has one of the like three reads, Josh looks to him first, right? He's always hoping that Keon Coleman is going to break away from the line. He's going to have a good release. He's going to be ready and available. And he turns down that option a lot, quite a lot. The reason I think he's going to go over 50 yards is because I do think that, like you said, the Bills defense is not going to have answers for the Chiefs offense. They're going to get gashed quite a bit. And that Keon Coleman is going to be relied on because he is that first read for better or worse, because Josh Allen wants to hit that X receiver, whether it's play design, Josh's preference, or you know something else. I know that he looks there often, and Keon is the most targeted wide receiver on this team right now.
Yeah, although they did go away from him, and I was happy to see this in the Carolina game, right?
Yeah,
and Josh Palmer was limited today, so there's a chance that we see him
I don't think so. Maybe. High ankles with the Bills tend to be a 4-week injury.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And they This will be three.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I am actually taking the under on this one. Coleman has not had good games against Kansas City, and I do think they've got dudes that can frustrate him on the outside, and McDuffie and Watson for sure. However, I will also add a piece to this that says after this game, Coleman becomes potentially more disgruntled. We call up Jacksonville. We're like, hey, let's trade for disgruntled wide receivers and give them each a breath of fresh air, and we'll throw in a second round pick. And you send us Brian Thomas Jr. and we'll send you Keon.
I might do it. Yeah.
I mean, what would stop you from doing that?
I don't know. The only thing that stopped me is like a second. A second is a little rich. Maybe a third in Keon.
Yeah, I don't think Jacksonville would take that.
Yeah.
I think they would need. I mean, honestly, I would. I want to buy low on this, but I don't think a third gets it done. And honestly, Keon fits in really well to that Leon Cohen offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason why Thomas has been so ineffective is he doesn't want to run in breakers. He doesn't want to come across the middle of the field at any level of his route tree. Yeah. He is a pure sideline burner. What do the Buffalo Bills need? Pure sideline burner.
Right.
And what has Keon Coleman shown a propensity for? He's happy to come across the middle, right?
He wants to get dirty in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's a cool call out. All right, I'm going to hit this prop until I fail on it. Michael Hoyt, over under one sack.
I am tempted to go over just because I was so happy with what I saw from Hoyt. And then he had that edge to him and that little bit of trolling he did at the end of the game where he took the flop after he drew a flag for unnecessary roughness.
Yes.
I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he took the flop on it. I mean, he's just, and I put this out on our socials. he is going to be the player that other fan bases hate that we will love that he is on our team.
Yeah, yeah.
So just because of that, I want to say over. I think he's going to be juiced. I think he's got a little Cam Scataboo in him too. And this is his first Chiefs game with the Bills. I think he's going to be juiced. I would actually take the over.
I think that it's being underreported maybe that he playing in proximity to his hometown is like just, I think it's super massive for this guy. Just the way he talks about ball. I think it matters quite a lot. And I think that he, it comes through in his play in one game sample size. And I love that somebody got him on the side. I think Sal Capaccio or somebody got him on the sideline and asked him, you had such a splash in this game. And he's like, you only get one chance to make a first impression. Like that's awesome. Awesome juice.
Yeah, he's a good one. I think we're going to like him. God, I hope I'm not wrong about that. All right, I got one more prop for you. Xavier Worthy, who apparently has a blood feud with the Buffalo Bills for being one of the 31 teams that refused to draft him.
Yes.
But he holds it personal against the Bills for whatever reason.
Well, they traded out of the spot, the exact spot he was selected.
I know, but like, come give me a break. That's... Like they weren't taking him in that spot.
Yeah. No, but the Chiefs did. So like, it's the kind of thing where I get it. I get it from the player's perspective. It's like you literally had me on the board, and you traded to get away from me.
It's so contrived. Yeah. How many other teams didn't pick this guy, right? I mean, give me a break. Anyways, he seems to save his best games specifically for us. Over under JJ Xavier Worthy 80.5 yards and half a TD reception.
I think people who watch or listen are going to be tired of my huge, heavy sigh when I try to decide how I think these, because I just thought, I was like, I think I do that every single time. Shit.
It's supposed to be hard though, right? Yeah. This is why we do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to hit the under just because I think that this is, you know, the Chiefs have this groundbreaking new motto they've employed this season, which is everybody got to eat. I don't know if you've ever heard anything like it.
I hate them so much for that.
Yeah, they just started it this season, and no one's ever done anything like it before, just in case you wondered.
It's like Jesus Christ. Like, the team that you've dominated in the playoffs for the last, like, 7 years, it's like, just because you lost and got obliterated in the Super Bowl, you can't troll the team you lost to because you don't have a foot to stand on, so you pick on the team everybody that you beat.
Yeah.
I fucking hate those guys. They're petty.
They're jerks.
Themselves. Yeah. I hate it. Yeah. And I hate the disingenuous media coverage of it too. Like asking Travis Kelce, man, what is it about the selflessness of this team and this everybody's got to eat motto? It's like, did you guys not exist last year when Buffalo got rid of Diggs? Like, give me a break.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Why has no one asked, is this troll of Buffalo, you frauds?
Why has nobody asked, hey, this is really exactly quite identical to a different team that is a rival of yours?
I hate them. I hate them so much. Hate them.
So I'm gonna say the under, and I'll tell you why. It's because of that their new everybody gotta eat motto. I feel like the Bills are probably gonna pay a lot of attention to Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy with safety help. And so I think, like you said, the other receivers, crossing underneath Kelce. I think there's some other pieces that are gonna maybe blow up a little bit more because I do trust that McDermott and Babich are going to try to take away what they do best in their outside receivers. But that means, Hollywood Brown and others might feast.
Yeah. I'm you've kind of talked me into taking the under there too, only because too, as creative as Andy Reid is as a play caller, Xavier Worthy still seems to be a player where it's like, unless he's running like a go route, they really don't have a lot schemed up for him. And his catch rate still isn't the best. He's a little bit of a body catcher. I think he's sitting somewhere around 59-60% for his catch rate. Like, he is an option on that team, and his speed deep is a threat, and you see teams favoring it, which will open stuff up for Rice, which is why I think you see the majority of the targets going there, for sure. Him and Kelce. Yep. Yeah. All right,
Got one final prop from me.
Let's do a defense.
Let's do an offense. Josh Allen, over, under, 1.5 passing touchdowns.
I mean, over? Probably, right? I mean, the Chiefs are a team he has played well against, and like he regularly lays a 30 burger on Spags, right? I mean, Spags is, like we have said, the GOAT, but Spags has not shut down Josh Allen. He has found the one play every game where he can get Josh Allen off the field, right?
Yeah.
But he has not been able to consistently throttle or shut down Josh. So yeah, yep. I'm going to say sure.
Okay.
And I think, and if Joe Brady is a good offensive coordinator, mm-hmm. both of those will go to James Cook. Because can we please use James Cook in the passing game too against team?
Yeah, absolutely. A team that has been extremely vulnerable to tight ends and running backs in the middle of the field.
All right, which means we're going to see Dalton Kincaid for 40% of the snaps. Just lose my mind right now. God, I can see. I can read you the stat line right now.
Well, to be fair, I think Dalton Kincaid is dragging around an injury again. I don't think he's. He definitely wasn't 100% in the Carolina game.
I know, but they for the love of God, come on. What are you going to do? He's your best. He's like your best. Best pass catcher.
He's your best pass catcher, without a doubt.
Oh God! Yeah. But then feed Cook. Feed Cook.
Yep.
If Cook doesn't have at least 25 touches in this game, what are we doing? What are we doing with?
What are we even doing? Yeah.
Why are we here?
Right. All right. Yeah. Let's not end it negative though. The Bills are coming off a 40-9 drubbing. Looking good in the running game. Looking better on defense, and have a matchup with the Chiefs in the prime 425 window at home. In Buffalo, everyone's going to have plenty of time to tailgate and get sauced up. It's going to be an electric atmosphere. Looks like it's going to be an okay weather day, not super great. Looks like maybe a little rain, a little chilly, but we're excited. Let's end on a positive note, Dan. Let's go.
Oh man, I'm ready for this game. I'm absolutely ready for this game. It matters in a way that we're not used to it mattering.
Yes.
But by the same token, the stakes are still really high. And no matter what the narrative is about the Bills always do it in the regular season, they can't do it in the postseason. It is always good to chalk up a win against a conference rival, potentially put this conference rival on their back heels too when it comes to actually making the postseason.
Right.
I mean, isn't Kansas City right now currently hanging on to the seventh seed?
Yeah, they have three losses already. Yeah, so
yeah. I would love to hand them a fourth and make really hard for them to get into the because they don't have an easy schedule coming up. They got a pretty feisty division, right?
Yep.
So this could be one that absolutely puts a division conference rival on their heels, and I would like to see the Bills do that. So yeah. Yep. No, I'm juiced. I'm going to be watching the game very, very intently for sure. Very excited for it, JJ. But yeah. Yep. All right. And hopefully all of you listening home are excited too. And we thank you for spending a little bit of time with us before the game. As always, please like, share, and subscribe. Drop us a review wherever you get your podcasts. We're on all the big ones, YouTube, Apple, Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.